time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham, and it is opening day, so we have a special guest. Greg Jewett from Reliever Recon is here. How are you doing, guys? I'll go with the guest first. Rick, you'll have to take a back seat first. Greg, how is opening day treating you?
It's been okay. As we were talking before we started recording here, just a little frenetic, but it's always to be expected on this first day. So there's a lot of things I'm sure we'll address. But yeah, it's, you know, there's never a dull moment in high leverage.
That's right. That's right. Rick, what about you? I know you're already last place in the my home league that you joined, but how's everything else treating you on opening day?
Yeah, I know. It's just every other league, every other team. I mean, it's opening day. Every other team I feel pretty confident in having a pretty good start. But yeah, I mean, it's like Greg said, it's a little chaotic opening day, especially trying to figure out, you know, bullpen usage here. As you know, we're going to get into some interesting, you know, scenarios today. So I'm just, you know, excited that baseball's back, though. It's been, you know, the lead up to it's always, you know, especially this week leading up, it's like once your drafts are done, it just kind of, it's just like itching for a real game to start. And it's nice to just finally have that actual stats we can look into, you know.
Yeah, I've been really excited for this season. Not that I'm not excited for every other season, but this one feels especially exciting for me. I have no idea why, what to attribute that to, but I was super pumped for opening day today. So much so that I worked remote so that I could have literally all 9 games on 2 computers and my phone going at the same time. So I was taking in as much baseball as I could all at once. But we've got a great show for our listeners today, as always. We'll be going over some of our takeaways from opening day, covering the final bout of injuries that we experienced right before opening day. And then, you know, it's not too late to do our predictions for the season, although we have seen a few games. I think considering there's still hundreds of days more left of baseball, it's still early enough for us to be able to go through and make our predictions about saves for certain teams and even for awards and World Series winners. But if you guys are ready to get started, we can just hop right into talking about the opening day games that we just experienced.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get right into it.
All right. So I think the biggest one, which we were even talking about in the short time that we were talking before we hit record, Jason Foley earned the save for the Tigers instead of Alex Lang, who was lined up to be the team's go-to closer. He was for most of last year as well. And we saw Shelby Miller and Andrew Chafin set up. I'll go to you, Greg, since you are our guest. Do you think Jason Foley is going to hold on to this role for the entire year, or is this a committee situation in Detroit?
Yeah, in the post-game interview that was shared to me through the Closer Monkey Twitter feed, Hinch talked about when he took Scooble out of the game that he wanted Shelby Miller because his fastball has a different look. And then he used Chafin to get through a couple of the left-handed hitters and even Benintendi in the 9th. And then he brought in Foley because he wanted to turn around Yoan Moncada and face Eloy with that sinker. So, you know, Hinch does not really throw the word closer around a lot. He avoids it. He prefers to just say that they have matchup. So from what I can discern from all of this is I'm guessing Jason Foley's, and as I'm saying, for people who may not know, a lot of managers will assign relievers a pocket of a lineup. So 3 or 4 hitters that when they come into the game, whether it's the 7th, 8th, or 9th, that's when they're going to go in to face them. And, you know, Jordan Leisure even talked about that being part of what he heard from the White Sox. So in this regard, I'm guessing Foley had the 3-4-5 batters, or at least that portion of, or the, you know, 2-3-4, however it was going, he was going to face that part. And so that's his part of the lineup was up in the ninth, and they used Chafin to get Benintendi, and then they turned it over to him. It just means Lang probably has a different group, and if that group comes up in the ninth inning on Saturday, then you could see him get the save situation if Foley has to face those guys in the eighth. So I don't want to overreact to one game, but it just means that if you were planning on 25 saves from Lang, you might have to dial it back to like 20 or 21.
Yeah, that sounds like it makes a lot of sense. It really seems to be a clear-cut situation of a committee approach here, which to me is a lot of a headache, especially for a team that isn't really great. It's not going to win 100 games, so there's not going to be tons of save opportunities to go around. But Rick, if I made you choose here, who would you target in fantasy leagues? Who would you prefer to roster on your team?
I think right now it's I don't mind giving up on Lang yet. Like Greg said, it's, you know, if they're going to go with this committee, this pot, you know, a pocket approach, then you're going to get you're probably going to get value from both Lang and Foley. So I think, you know, with Lang, you're not dropping him or anything yet. And, you know, you can add Foley. I feel like Foley's still worth an add, but don't go, you know, dropping Lang for Foley, because that's going to probably bite you. It's going to be, you know, I think both can have value. And with Foley's stuff, like we saw today, if he keeps throwing, you know, 99, 100 with that sinker, yeah, he's going to really up his, you know, swing and miss rate from last year. So, you know, Foley's definitely on the radar. He's definitely worth a look. But, yeah, don't panic on Lang just yet.
Yeah, that was the coolest thing that I saw from Foley today, was him throwing the ball over 100 miles per hour. And he was a guy that sort of seemed to have a low ceiling, which Alex Lang was able to keep because he gets a lot of strikeouts. But maybe now that Foley's throwing over 100 miles per hour, maybe his ceiling rises a little bit and he becomes a more legitimate option in fantasy. But that's definitely a situation to keep an eye on. But right now it looks like it's going to be a committee approach in Detroit. We'll move to Minnesota, staying in the AL Central, and we'll talk about Griffin Jacks, as he got the save in the first game in the absence of Yoan Duran, who's recovering from an oblique strain. We saw Brock Stewart set up there as well. Rick, I don't think there's really much fantasy analysis we can do here, because it seems like it's a two-man race between Jacks and Stewart. But did this outing give you more confidence that Jacks is going to be the guy up until Duran's return?
Yeah, I do think Jacks is definitely going to be the guy to get the bulk of the saves there. But I'm, you know, this could also be a scenario, I wouldn't be surprised, where you see a little bit, you know, of Stewart mixing in as well, depending on who's up in the, you know, in the other team's lineup. You know, Jacks has an awesome slider, but his fastball still, you know, we'll say average at best. It's, you know, Stewart is able to, you know, get a little bit more on his fastball, get a little bit more swing and miss with it. So, you know, I think it could be matchup based. And, you know, Rocco Baldelli coming from somewhat of the Rays school of thinking, you know, I'm sure he doesn't, you know, they declined to just name Jacks the outright closer in Duran's absence. So a good start for Jacks, and, you know, definitely worth a look in most leagues. But I think Stewart, again, you know, worth maybe rostering through the weekend, through next week, see what happens there. You know, because we're not going to expect Duran back until probably mid-May at best. So there's some time here for both of them to have some value. But yeah, Jacks definitely made, you know, good first impression today. Slider still elite.
Totally. Greg, do you have a different take on this situation, or are you echoing Rick's sentiments?
Yeah, I'm in line, and the fact is Jacks came in against Bobby Witt Jr., so that was the 2-3-4 pocket. So, I mean, he was probably going to get those guys if it was the eighth. So we look like geniuses today, but if Witt came up in the eighth, leading off the eighth inning, and Jacks came in, and everybody would be talking about, why didn't you tell me to get Stewart if they flipped the script? So we really have to see what happens if Bobby Witt and those guys come up in the eighth instead of the ninth in one of these games, if it's Jacks against them again, or are they keeping them for the ninth inning? I think that'll really give you your answer.
Yeah, that's a great point. Just the fact that he may be able to be used as a high leverage reliever outside of a closer. So that'll be worth keeping an eye on. We'll move over to a couple situations that are likely pretty stable, but we got to see how these late inning duos will work out. In San Diego, we saw this in the Korea series as well. Yuki Matsui set up for Robert Suarez. Matsui earned the win. Suarez got the save. And then in New York, well, it was in Houston, but for the Yankees, Ian Hamilton set up for Clay Holmes. Hamilton got the hold and Holmes got the save. I think it's pretty clear at this point that Suarez is going to be the closer, at least to start the year for the Padres. And Clay Holmes, I think, has very little competition in New York. But did these outcomes change your minds at all about this situation, Greg? Do you think Matsui is going to continue to be the setup guy in San Diego? And is Ian Hamilton option number two in New York?
Yes and yes. I was on Team Suarez in the preseason. And Matsui's had a very nice start. But we have to see. As these guys come over from the MPB, there's always a fatigue factor. And given the fact that he's not a big dude, and there's always going to be a wear down because they're not used to it. You hear all of the Japanese players say that they're just not used to the travel, the length of the season, and the volume of play. So I think he'll do well, and then he'll probably hit the wall, and then he'll probably finish the year, especially if they give him like a little injury-less stint to give him some rest. But I think they have to manage his workload a little better than they have been so far. And luckily they had that break from the Seoul series, but he's been making a lot of appearances even in this little window of time. So Suarez did give up the solo home run, but I'm not too worried. I think he can do fine. I really liked where he was being priced, although in the main events it jumped up after he got that save against the Dodgers. Yeah. As far as the Yankees go, I honestly thought Hamilton was going to be the, quotations replacement for Michael King as like a multi-inning weapon that could get you vulture wins and some ancillary saves. But it looks like they're shifting that. Well, it doesn't look like they've shifted Loaiza into that role instead. They said Loaiza is going to work multiple innings and then get 2 days off. So he worked 2 innings today, got the win, and he's going to get at least 2 days off before he makes his next appearance. And with Tommy Conley out, it certainly appears that Hamilton is the next in line if anything happened to Holmes. Holmes got lucky. He gave up a lot of contact and a runner getting thrown out at home, and we would not be talking about his save. So I'm very interested by Ian Hamilton. He might be somebody that you kind of tuck away if you have a deep bench, or you just keep him on the watch list. And then if Holmes keeps struggling a little bit, that might be somebody you want to get a week early rather than having to pay the full freight if he ends up usurping his role at some point this year.
Rick, do you have any other thoughts on these situations? Is Ian Hamilton a holds riser now that it's clear that he's the top setup guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Greg, I think, nailed it on definitely the San Diego situation. I don't have to touch on that really any further. That's, I'm in agreement there with Suarez and Matsui. But yeah, Ian Hamilton, I rose him up the holds rankings today based on, in the spring, it just was pretty clear that he's a step above Loaiza right now. I think Loaiza's still, he's still battling some injuries, and it his usage today and, two innings, I feel like that makes a lot of sense for him to just come in every other, every second or third day and throw. He threw 23 sinkers of his 25 pitches, only two off-speed pitches. I mean, he's not going to get any swings and misses. He's not going to, get strikeouts, but he's still, useful as a guy to come and throw hard sinkers and get outs for them. So I think Hamilton now is the guy who can get swings and misses there. And if anything does happen with Holmes, if he does have a couple blown saves or were to get hurt, I think Hamilton's the next in line. He had a great spring. He's had a pretty good year last year. I mean, a really good year, 2.680 ERA, something like that. Slider gets, he had two whiffs on three swings on the slider today. So yeah, I really like Ian Hamilton. And, when Conley comes back, that's going to be interesting to see who works the eighth then, but for now, Hamilton's the guy.
Yeah, definitely a guy that I'm interested in holds leagues right now. For a Yankees team, that should provide him plenty of opportunities to lock down holds in the late innings. The last couple of takeaways from some of the opening day games, in that same Yankees game, Josh Hader pitched the ninth down by one, and Tanner Scott pitched the ninth in a tie game. Hader looked great. Tanner Scott seemed to have lost complete control over his arsenal. The slider was pretty solid, but he could not spot his fastballs. Rick and I were sort of watching that simultaneously and live tweeting each other in the DMs. But Rick, do you have any takeaways from Hader's or Scott's appearances?
Yeah, I think Hader, I mean, possibly because they're down Abreu, they wanted to get him an inning of work. It's a one-run game, so that's not too uncharacteristic to see a closer in that situation. And, you know, he struck out the side, so he looked fine. Scott, I'm hoping he bounced back in the spring. His last couple outings were good. He didn't have any walks over his last four innings. I want to believe at least that, you know, he's not going to just completely revert back to pre-2023 Tanner Scott, who can't find the strike zone. He just needs to trust his stuff. He gets swings and misses when his stuff's around the zone. If he can get ahead in counts like he did last year, he'll be fine. So I'm hoping today was just kind of like nerves, or I don't know, opening day jitters, but I'm still in on Scott. I just want to see the fastball command get back.
Definitely. Greg, did you get a chance to see Tanner Scott, and do you have any idea what we may be able to attribute his lack of control to?
Well, I mean, he's never been known as a control guy. His second half last year is what we're trying to figure out. Was that just a hot streak anomaly, or was it a growth? So today it doesn't look too hot, but we're hoping. I was really surprised in spring. I don't know why they kept putting him out there. You figured they would have just put him on the backfields and had him working on command. I just think he needs a side session or two, or look at video. A lot of times guys need to do that to get themselves back. He might be just flying out too early with the shoulder, just missing his spots by a smidge. So, but a 42% strike percentage is not ideal.
No, not at all. But that's basically most of the news that we've sort of taken away from opening day. We'll move over to some of the injuries that have happened across the past week, including some news that we've gotten today. I think the biggest one was Paul Sewald of the Diamondbacks, who landed on the 15-day IL with a moderate oblique strain, which is the same exact injury that Yoan Duran of the Twins is dealing with. So Paul Sewald is likely set for an absence of at least 6 weeks. Probably won't see him until mid-May, like you said, with Duran. And there's a possibility that we don't even see him until June or later, because obliques can be very finicky. It looks like, and I think we got confirmation from Ginkle himself, that Kevin Ginkle will be the closer in Paul Sewald's absence. Greg, where would you rank Ginkle among closers? Is he a top 15 guy, or does the shakiness of the situation, just not having seen him be a closer in the past, does it make it hard for him to crack that top 15?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to put him in the top 15, but I did add him in tout. So, it's, I have no issue with doing that. And his draft capital after the news broke definitely shot up. So people are in tune with what's happening. I was really upset because in my main event, the news broke and it was like 5 picks away. And obviously he got taken before it came back to me. That's the hard thing with a live draft. It's where you are when this stuff happens. And I wasn't even like tooling around on my phone during a draft, cause I kind of have a process and I was focused, but it was like, I really could have used him as a second reliever, and that stung. But yeah, I do like him. Again, he had a great season from June 1st on, had a whip below one. I think he had 6 wins in that time frame, a couple of saves, but that coincided with them trading for Sewald. It was like just when everybody was like, this is it for Ginkle, right? And then they cut his legs out and put him into the 8th inning, but it worked out getting him a shot in the World Series. So, I think he can be very good. He's another guy. We just want to make sure the command's there. But when he's on, he's filthy and he can generate swinging strikes. So, again, outside the top 15, but depending on how Arizona plays, he could bubble up if they do well. I think the real funny thing here will be is what happens if Seawall comes back and he struggles.
Yeah.
Because he's a free agent at the end of the season. They don't, you know, it's not like they're tethered to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my thinking with it, is that Ginkle seems to be a guy that if he holds on to this closer role for 2 months, that he might never let go of it. He's just been very consistent last year and through the playoffs. So if he can carry over the success that he had last year, he could hold on to this closer role throughout the entire year. And I can relate to your personal fantasy anecdote. I had him in Barf, and when Fab came around on Sunday, I dropped him because Brock Stewart was available. Yeah. And then the next day the news came out and I was kicking myself over that.
Yeah,
so <that's... laughs> that was unfortunate. But Rick, how are you feeling about Kevin Ginkle in the closer role in Arizona?
Yeah, I think that's, I'm probably going to have him around 20-ish or so, not 15, but yeah, I do think there's definitely a pathway where he doesn't let go of the role because, you know, 2 months, that's a lot of time. First of all, you know, we've seen closers get 9 saves in a month. So, you know, we might be getting, you know, he's still worth adding because you could possibly get, you know, 10 to 15 saves if everything goes right here. But yeah, I do like Seawald's, you know, not the closer of the future. I don't think so. I think, you know, Ginkle after this year takes over. So yeah, they might just make that switch, you know, ease Seawald back into into things in June when he gets back. And yeah, I think Ginkle, out of all the, you know, all the injury news, all the, you know, new closers, I guess, over the past 2 weeks, I think Ginkle's the top option to roster at this point.
That's right. In the NL West, the Dodgers, Blake Treinen is a ways away from returning. He suffered yet another setback to his return to the major league mound. He suffered a bruised lung after being struck by a comebacker, and it looks like he's probably going to be out for a few weeks before returning to baseball activities. So I think at the earliest, we won't see him until May. But we haven't seen him pitch in so long. It might be pretty hard to trust him on a fantasy team anyway. And I feel like Joe Kelly, Ryan Brazier, and Daniel Hudson move up a little bit in the holds ranks because they won't have Treinen stealing holds there in LA. But Rick, what are you thinking about this situation?
Yeah, I mean, Treinen looked okay in spring. Nothing really to you know, wow. I think Gratterall too, I think included in this news, Gratterall is also going to be out for a while. It doesn't sound like he's going to be pitching anytime soon. So with both Treinen and Gratterall out for the foreseeable future, yeah, Joe Kelly, Ryan Brazier, and Alex Vesey are the kind of the three guys I look at there. And maybe, you know, we'll see how Kyle Hurt factors in. Very intriguing prospect for them. So but yeah, Joe Kelly, I think Joe Kelly can be very frustrating to watch. But he's had bad luck the past couple of years. Maybe this is the year his luck goes his way. He has a good season. Yeah, I think Kelly's the top holds option there. I still like Alex Vezia. He was a little shaky in the Korea series. But still, you know, the way his fastball worked at the end of last year, it's very intriguing. But yeah, Treinen, I don't think he's worth an IL stash outside of really deep leagues at this point. It's, you know, Daniel Hudson's looked pretty good coming back too as well. I feel like Hudson's, you know, if you're going to take a chance on one of those two to return to form, I would go with Hudson.
Yeah. Greg, do you have a favorite for holds in Los Angeles?
Not really. I mean, it's, it's, you know, because there's so many of them, I'd rather go somewhere where it's a little more linear or predictable, if that makes sense.
That's a good point. Sure. Yeah, because and this is the Dodgers have done
these guys are going to need rest too, because Hudson never dealt with the pitch clock and other stuff. Because I wrote about that the other day. I was like, you know, as excited as people get about Treinen and Hudson, they didn't go through last year, so they don't know what it's like pitching with this pitch clock and the fatigue factors that come in where all the other pitchers have had a chance to adapt.
That's a good point. And I mean, I think the Dodgers, they're going to probably win 100 games again, but they don't. Yeah, they spread out. The holds are always spread out amongst like 8 different guys. So, yeah, it's hard to really pinpoint one that you're going to say. Like, there's no, you know, Tyler Rogers or, you know, Jason Foley from last year, who you know is going to work the eighth inning. They're going to probably mix and match and give those guys, you know, Kelly and Hudson are up there in age, you know. So, yeah.
I was going to say, the biggest beneficiary of all of this is Evan Phillips.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he's so much more insulated. The only thing that could go against him is if the Dodgers do decide to go get a, you know, veteran closer with veteran with closer experience at the deadline. It could hurt Phillips because then he could end up going back to his HLR role. But at least until that point, you've got pretty much a clear run for Phillips until August.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good news for Dodgers fans. We can move over to the Pirates, where David Bednar is still recovering from a lat injury. Mm-hmm. We got that news after he did not pitch in a save situation on opening day, which was concerning, especially for me. He's on my home team. He's on my home league team. And I was just waiting for him to pitch. And there were so many opportunities because that was the game that went to the 12th inning versus the Marlins. And he just never appeared. We saw Aroldis Chapman in the 9th. We saw Luis Ortiz in the 10th and the 11th. And then Jose Hernandez came in and closed out the 12th. Greg, are you concerned at all about David Bednar, who's still recovering from this injury, or is this something where, you know, he's going to be back by next week and we'll have forgot about it in, you know, 2 weeks?
No, I of course I'm concerned. I'm not concerned from the fact that he's going to suddenly fall off a cliff. I'm just concerned that he can't handle the volume of saves that we want him to keep him to keep his fantasy status. I mean, you have to move him down as you see this, because I think at best right now, he'll be splitting saves with Chapman probably until the end of April. And then if, you know, we have to see Bednar be able to go back to back before we really can trust him as the, you know, as the closer. So I think this kind of, I might even have to change the ratings on my, you know, my depth charts. I might have to switch this to a closer by committee. I mean, it's not a true committee, but at the same token, I just don't see Bednar being able to go back to back at this point.
Where are you at with Bednar, Rick?
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning. I don't understand if he's not able to, you know, if he's not able for opening day. It's such a long season. I'm not sure why they didn't just, you know, give him a 15-day IL stint to start the year, similar to Romano. You know, it sounds like Jordan Romano is going to be back by, you know, April 9th when he's eligible. I don't, you know, don't see any reason to push Bednar. So interesting. I mean, that bullpen is already kind of beat up at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's it.
Yeah. So that's probably
if they didn't lose Holderman and Kaczynski,
right,
then they probably would have given Bednar a break, but I think they're just keeping him in there because they need warm bodies.
Yeah, and if you know, he's still dealing with that. They have Chapman there. It might be more of a committee, at least for the start of the season, until he's feeling, you know, yeah, like you said, we gotta see him go back to back days before you can really trust him again. So yeah, he's definitely going to fall next week in my ranks as well. I, you know, it's concerning when he's already, you know, this thing's been kind of lingering all spring with him. So, yeah, it's you just got to wonder if he needs to take a, you know, an IL stint to get this thing under control.
Well, that's David Bednar, and we can move on to the final two. I don't think these require any analysis at all, but Trevor Gott is set to undergo Tommy John surgery. He was playing for the A's. Austin Adams signed with the A's, and so I think he could immediately become a setup option, but he's not that great. The A's aren't going to be winning too many games, so I'm not targeting too many holds options in Oakland. And then Orion Kerkering is going to start the season on the IL with quote-unquote right forearm strain, which is false. The manager suggested he's actually just trying to build up after dealing with the flu. So I think he's going to be fine. I think that injury designation might concern some people, but he will be back in a couple of weeks. Whether or not he's getting saves is yet to be determined, but I find that unlikely. But we will find out shortly enough. I also wanted to point out that Jesse Chavez was released by the White Sox and once again landed with the Braves, which of course he did. I'm sure they'll turn him into a sub-2 ERA arm like they did last year. That's just something that we can always count on. But that'll wrap up our opening day takeaways and our discussions about injuries from the past week. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about our predictions for the 2024 MLB season here on In the Pen.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Greg Jewett and Rick Graham on In the Pen. We just discussed our opening day takeaways, and now we'll move on to our predictions for the 2024 MLB season. We'll start it off with predictions about saves for each bullpen, where right now it's not totally clear who the top save option is, or maybe there is a top option and we're not super confident in them. But we'll go through a few teams and we'll all determine who is going to lead the team in saves. And of course, all of us are going to be right, so there's no reason to worry about your choices. We'll start with the Chicago Cubs. Greg, who is going to lead the Chicago Cubs in saves this year?
Barring an injury, Alzolay.
Rick, where are you at?
Yeah, I remember last year when we did this, I went with Julian Merriweather last year, and I was kind of tempted to go with him again. He just pitched. I think he came in the fifth inning tonight, though, so I might change my tune here and go. You know, Alzolay is the smart choice, but I think, you know, I wonder what Hector Neris's role is going to be here. So I'm going to – this is going to be my bold prediction for the night. My others are kind of more obvious, so I'm going to say Hector Neris on this one.
All right. I'm going to agree with Greg here. I'm also going with Alzolay. I just think he's going to begin the season as the closer, and that's usually the safest bet in these situations. But I would not be surprised if Neris takes over at some point.
I'm not a big Neris fan. I think, you know, a lot of the under the... The spring was terrible.
Results don't matter, but man.
It's not just the spring either. It's like... Off. Yeah, and he's always had a home run problem for the most part in his career. Last year, he got lucky, I feel like, with, you know, a lot of things. Under the radar, under the hood stats weren't that great for him, despite his, you know, ERA and whip last year. But it's going to be different with Council not having, you know, Josh Hader or Devin Williams to turn to now. But he's so good. He's not a big strikeout guy, but he's just, you know, good at getting outs in key situations. You feel like he makes more sense as a two inning guy, potentially, like coming in the sixth inning to get out of a jam, a starter created, potentially, you know, working the sixth and then the seventh and then turning it over to, you know, Merriweather and Neris. But I don't know. Alzolay was fine in the closer role. There's really no reason to remove him. So it's probably the logical choice.
Yep. And then on the south side of Chicago, we've got plenty of options in the Windy City, but there aren't too many that we're super confident in. There was a time when it looked like John Brebbia was going to be the guy, and then they added about four other guys to compete with him. Rick, who do you have leading the Chicago White Sox in saves?
I don't see any of them getting probably more than 20 saves. Maybe someone gets to 20 saves here. But I think, you know, at some point Jordan Leisure probably takes over just because he's got the best stuff in that bullpen right now. I know Kopech was a little promising today. He was able to get up to 98. He was sitting around 96.5. That's, you know, if he's sitting at 97, he's, you know, there might be something there with him. Like, we look back to, what was it, 2021 when he was a full-time reliever. Maybe he can replicate that. But yeah, I still like Leisure. I mean, I'm glad he's on the opening day roster. Good for the White Sox for, you know, promoting him. I think, you know, eventually he takes over that role.
Yeah, he's got some crazy stuff, and I'd love to see him take over that role. Though I am a little bit concerned about his age and his contract structure.
Arbitration, yeah.
So that's usually the thing that pushes me away from that. And I think Michael Kopech just has the upside over Wilson and Brebbia, who are likely trade candidates at some point. So I'm going to go with Kopech here. Greg, what are you feeling in Chicago?
I think Kopech will end up getting the most saves, but I think they're going to do it just so they can build his trade value.
That makes sense as well.
I think he's got one foot out the door. They probably told him, hey, we'll put you in the bullpen. We'll get you some leverage things, and then we'll flip you to a contender.
Yeah, he's still got
one. And then someone like the Dodgers can figure out how to fix you.
yeah, totally. He's still got one more year of control, so they don't have to trade him. But that does mean that he's,
I'm just saying
he's very close to free agency.
That boosts his value, though. If you could trade him this deadline, then you get him for this, for the postseason run this year, plus another year next year. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. And I don't want. I haven't heard any updates about Prelander Baroa and that shoulder, but I mean,
he was supposed to be throwing. Yeah,
he could be a factor at some point in the second half. I mean, Leisure's a nice story, but it'd be interesting to see if those two guys are right. doing leverage outings in late August.
All right. And then in Colorado, we are currently in the post Daniel Bard era, and it's never really a situation we want to target because of the ballpark.
He's supposed to come back in May.
Well, I mean, post Daniel Bard as the closer era, which was a great time, a real peak for fantasy baseball reliever analysis. But nonetheless, we're currently looking at a 2-horse race, I think, in Colorado. Greg, who do you have leading the Rockies in saves this year?
I projected Kinley for more, but then Patrick Saunders wrote that Justin Lawrence is penciled in as the closer. So maybe we'll have a better idea if they can win a game this weekend. We'll see who gets it. It's tough. I think Kinley's stuff is probably better suited for one inning outings, whereas Justin Lawrence can get four outs when they need him and things of that nature. So even if Lawrence starts in a role, you might see him migrate back towards the things we talk about with Jackson and the other guys being the highest leverage reliever. So they could still end up even splitting some of the few save chances they get here early on. I won't go against myself. I projected Kinley for more at the beginning of the year, so I'll stay there.
All right. Rick, you on the same page there?
Yeah, I'll go Kinley there. I think I think Kinley's got a higher floor. I think Lawrence has, Lawrence has a little bit more blow up potential. And I think just Kinley's probably going to be a safer guy that they can, just rely on to not completely implode every now and then. So I'm going to go Kinley, but yeah, I don't feel great about either one, to be honest.
I would say in the second half, I'm really curious if Jaden Hill.
Yeah,
they've transitioned him into a relief role. So if he can do well in the minors, and I hope they put him in Double A, not Triple A, because Colorado Springs is not easy for a young reliever. But I think he's someone to keep in mind for the second half.
Jaden Hill.
Yeah, he's a former LSU. Yeah.
Yeah, former starter, and they converted him to the bullpen.
He was drafted, and then he had Tommy John. He had three good pitches coming out of college. He makes it. Yeah, hopefully he starts in Hartford, because that's a lot better for a pitcher's ballpark, and get him to build up some confidence as a reliever. That would be interesting. It's just give me someone exciting in that.
Sure.
Pitching staff at all. Just give me someone that's like kind of exciting in Colorado to at some point this year. That would be nice.
Well, hopefully Hill is that guy. He definitely needs to make some change, and maybe it will be a switch to the bullpen, because he had a 9.48 ERA at High A last year. I will take Greg's word that this guy has some legit stuff.
He hit 99.
He does.
He throws 99. All right.
So, I mean, if you got velocity, that's step one in overcoming the mile high altitude there. So, that's a plus in his back pocket. We just have to see. They want him to go down there and work on back to backs and getting used to the wear and tear that relievers have versus starters.
Well, that's a good dark horse guy to be the closer at some point in the next couple of years. We'll likely keep an eye on that. I think I'm going with Justin Lawrence here. I have always been enamored with his stuff, and from the angle that he throws from, I would love to see him go out of Colorado and pitch for any other team, and maybe then he could take off.
Yeah.
But just with him being the closer to open the year, I feel like he's going to rack up the most saves in Colorado, but I totally understand the Kinley choice. In Detroit, we already discussed this earlier this podcast, but Rick, who do you have leading the Tigers in saves, Foley or Lang?
I had Lang before today's game. I'm going to stick with him. I'm going to stick with him because I still believe I'm still an Alex Lang believer. The stuff, obviously the command's a huge, huge issue. It's, he's going to have to get his walk rate at least closer to 10%, for him to have full trust from AJ Hinch. But I still believe, he's got his changeup curveball really good, fastball, his sinker's fine. It does the job. There's really, big potential here of Lang, so I'm going to go with him. But Foley is impressing me, and I thought Foley was kind of like a Bruce Dark Gratterall light, just a guy who throws heavy sinkers that doesn't get a ton of swings and misses, but there might be more to him. I'm going Lang for now, but Foley's creeping up there. And Shelby Miller's looked good this spring, too. He's another guy who I thought was a mirage after the smoke and mirrors from last year. Cause none of the metrics look great for him despite his, ERA last year, but he backed it up this spring and had a really good spring. So I think this really is a bullpen that they could just throw at any guy, any given night, depending on who matches up best with the pockets, like Greg was talking about. And that really might be their best option this year. So we might get, 10 to 12 saves from a bunch of different guys, maybe 15 saves from two guys. But yeah, Foley goes for me. It's Lang, Foley, and then Miller.
Yeah, this bullpen has definitely turned around since last year, where we really didn't have too much confidence in Detroit heading into the season. Greg, who is your choice between those two? Or, if you want to go crazy, choose somebody else.
Actually, when I did my stuff for Recon, I had Lang with 18. Foley with 7 and Miller with 10, but I might just have to flip flop Foley and Miller. But I didn't project Lang for more than 20 saves, and that was, I'm not trying to take a victory lap here. That was just my concern about his command and how they might structure this bullpen. So that might be pretty close to accurate with what happened. So it's still Lang for me, but I wouldn't recommend rushing to drop him just yet, because that could be one of those things where you rash drop him and then you're like, oh crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, hey, in my book, it's never too early to take victory laps. I was taking them all year last year, but I'm gonna go with Foley here, not only just to zig while you guys zag, but I'm gonna trust my feelings here and just be enamored with that 100 mile per hour fastball, and hopefully he goes crazy, but I would not be surprised if it was Lang. Staying in the AL Central, the Royals have somewhat of a committee right now. It's unclear who's going to be the closer there. We saw James MacArthur end the season as the closer, and they signed Will Smith, who was a closer for a majority of the season last year for the Rangers. Greg, do you have a favorite amongst those two, or is there somebody else you're eyeing as the saves leader in Kansas City?
Well, it's funny, the beat writer in her thing today for the Royals said that she thinks the eventual saves leader is not on the roster right now. But I kind of think MacArthur is going to do what Alzolay did last year, where he didn't start out as the closer and then kind of took over in June. I think that's going to be the pathway for MacArthur. He doesn't have overwhelming stuff, but his arsenal plays well. And when I watched him in the end of the year, he was going against Yordan Alvarez It wasn't like he was getting saves against podunk hitters. He was facing the heart of the lineup. So I think he grew into the role a little bit. So like I said, I think he's the patient play and he'll eventually lead this team in saves.
Yeah. Rick, I have same exact page. Yeah. I think Smith gets the first, crack at things because, veteran closer experience. But yeah, MacArthur's really grown on me. I wasn't sure after, obviously he had that great September last year. But yeah, he doesn't have overpowering stuff, but then he backed it up this spring, had a really good spring, and, he might not throw, high upper 90s, but he, he's 6'7". He's got a good extension. He sneaks up on hitters. He's, you know, he's making it work with the three pitches he has. So MacArthur is definitely a more, you know, a more upside play than Smith. I don't think Will Smith hangs on to it for more than a month or two.
Well, I'm going with the boring option. I'm going with Smith. You know, he's won the World Series in each of the last 3 years, so he's doing something right.
Yeah.
But I would once again not be surprised if one of the youngsters
take it
over.
He wasn't closing out Game 7 in any of those.
That's true.
No, he was not. No, he was not. All right, we can move over to the Angels, and I think this is a situation where we might finally agree across the board. It's yet to happen.
I don't know.
Rick, I know where you are on this, but Carlos Estevez or somebody else in Los Angeles?
I just can't. I can't bet on Estevez. I'm starting to feel like am I wrong for thinking Robert Stevenson? Because I know I'm trying to be patient with him. It doesn't sound like
he threw on Thursday.
Right. Yeah. He's throwing at least. So it's not like he's not getting surgery. He's not getting surgery tomorrow. Like he's still able to throw. No, I'm hoping he's back by the end of the month or early May. And then, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Estevez is just, I don't know the Angels. I just don't trust the Angels to be able to fix him and get him right. I don't think he's never really been good. He's shown these pockets where he's been, you know, oh, maybe there's something there. He throws hard, decent off speed pitch. But it's just, yeah, I think Stevenson, you know, from June on, just like Stevenson, you know, last year, I think from June on, Stevenson's going to be the guy there to rely on.
Greg, are you a Stevenson guy? I couldn't tell by your laughter.
No, I like Stevenson. I just question, he always seems to miss time. I don't know if he just doesn't have some guys just don't have the DNA for 162 games, and I think he's one of those cats. I think Estevez will actually lead the team in saves because they're going to keep him there until they flip him. And then once they trade him, they'll hopefully have Stevenson on track and he can take over and hold it going into next year. You know, Estevez is a free agent at the end of the season. You really can't build any trade value if you take him out of the ninth inning. He was working with, there was an outing in the spring. He was 4 ticks down. Then his last outing, he was only 2 ticks down. So hopefully his velocity is back to normal when he's pitching in a regular season game, but that remains to be seen. But same thing. I think I put Estevez with like 18 or 19 and Stevenson with like 12 based on the baton pass at the trade deadline.
That makes sense. And the one thing with Stevenson, like you said, like is he, you know, the concern I have too is it's just not just the shoulder issue right now. It's just, you know, he went to the Rays last year. I've said this before. Jake knows what I'm talking about. He went to the Rays last year and they basically just told him to throw his slider harder. And, you know, the Rays have, you know, not had the best track record of keeping pitchers healthy. And I wonder, you know, I wonder if there's more to this shoulder, this arm injury. I wonder if they're actually, you know, not, I'm saying Tommy John's lingering or like there's a labrum issue lingering. But it's concerning that, you know, he's not able to, you know, ramp up to throwing, you know, live games yet. And, you know, just this him throwing his slider harder last year, I just can't imagine that has, you know, helped his arm health. So, yeah, I do. That's my only concern with Stevenson is him being able to stay healthy. But as long as he's able to, you know, be healthy while he's on the mound and have the same stuff he had last year, he should be fine.
The quotes are just hilarious. Like the thing from the OC Register was, well, he's with the team. He traveled. He's throwing. He threw Thursday, but there's no timeline for his return, but it shouldn't be long, was the exact quote. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean?
He's not even throwing bullpens yet. It's not going to be not long. It's yeah.
It won't be that long. Yeah. He's just doing some long toss.
Yeah. It's this time of year trying to source through that and figure out what that actually means. Yeah. It's headache inducing.
Yeah, that is a bit concerning, but I'm still riding the highs of last year's second half when he was clearly the best reliever in all of baseball in my eyes. So I'm going with Robert Stevenson.
No one to believe.
Yeah, I'm a little biased considering he's on a couple of my fantasy teams on my IL slot, but hopefully Stevenson is the guy there. But, you know, Greg is probably has a higher opportunity of being right here. I think we're going with the upside right. pick here. And that may be the case in Milwaukee, where I think this is one of the most interesting situations because we're without Devin Williams, who's going to be recovering from an injury. He does have an opportunity to come back in time to be the closer for the rest of the year and to take the saves crown in Milwaukee, but they've got plenty of options to back him up. Trevor Megill, Yoel Piamps, Abner Uribe. Greg, where are you at in Milwaukee?
Let's have a little fun here. I'll go team Megill.
Yes.
Yes. We're all on the same page.
Uribe is the closer of the future, but like yes. I was all excited to watch him the one spring training game and he like hit two guys and he didn't hit the bowl because it wasn't there, but it was like, you know, I think he's one of those people where if he comes out almost like Chapman, like you can tell if Chapman's going to mow down a lineup or if it's going to be a wild ride. I think Uribe is the same way. He's either going to come out and like strike out the side, or he's going to give up a three-run tater. My concern is, I think Piamps. Obviously, he pitched over his head last year. When you look at his Sierra and other things, I just feel like they're going to use him as I like to call the highest leverage reliever. So if there's like two runners on in the seventh, they might bring him in, and then he finishes the eighth inning too, and then Megill or Uribe gets the save situation. I just have a hard time believing they're going to say, okay, Piamps, the ninth inning's all yours. Especially with every quote from Murphy was, we're just going to match things up and see what happens. So new manager, no closer, and it's a wide open thing. So hopefully Megill can get a save chance early and make the best of it, and then momentum goes on his side.
Rick, where are you at?
Yeah, I'm on Megill, team Megill as well. That's right. These two between Megill and Stevenson. That's probably, and maybe Tanner Scott. Those are my most rostered relievers right now. Megill, yeah, I mean he's the second. We've talked about him a lot. The second half of last year, or at least you know August on, he was the best reliever there outside of Devin Williams. Maybe better than Devin Williams for that stretch. As we didn't know Devin Williams was dealing with a severe back injury in September as well. But Megill, yeah, I just think he's most suited for, and it seems like the tea leaves and from seeing what, you know, what the like reports out there, it seems like Megill is starting to trend towards being the favorite for saves there. I think Uribe, yeah, you just can't trust his command right now. And Piamps is not, you know, he's a big downgrade talent, you know, stuff wise from Megill and Uribe, but he is trustworthy at the moment. And like Greg said, maybe, yeah, he's the guy who comes in, you know, when there's, you know, a couple, you know, two guys on and the seventh inning, sixth inning, and to get out of the, you know, that fireman role, to get out of a jam. So, Megill just, yeah, he just has the closer. He's got the stuff for a closer. He's built like Felix Bautista. I want to see Megill in the closer role, and hopefully, yeah, like Greg said, he gets the save early on and he nails it, and then we don't have to really talk about it for much longer.
Yep, I'm on the same page there. We're tripling down on Trevor Megill in Milwaukee. He's just got such incredible stuff, and I think he's very underrated, and he'll finally, you know, get onto the big stage here with his performance in Milwaukee.
I do think too, and I just because we get Greg on, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like Devin Williams is kind of, he maybe has run his course in Milwaukee. I feel like he's kind of over. I don't know if you're picking up the same kind of vibes with him. I mean,
because
the training staff. Yeah.
He got that second opinion on his own. That wasn't like the team said, hey, go get a second look. He was like, I'm getting a second opinion on this because you guys, I'm calling BS.
Yeah, because he said, and he came out and he's like,
I hope Nick heard that. I didn't swear.
But he came out and he's like, yeah, what was the quote? It was like, I actually went and saw a doctor who knew what they were looking at. It's like, that's definitely a shot at the Brewers training staff. And he was, you know, he was not pleased with how they traded Hader and how they're not really committed to winning. So, yeah, I wonder, you know, I do wonder how many more innings we see from him in Milwaukee. So I think Megill, just not just for the short term, but I feel like, you know, long term, potentially he could be a really good play there.
I was saying in the preseason, I'd be shocked if Devin Williams wasn't closing games for Texas at some point this year.
Right. I was saying like Texas or like you mentioned, like I think maybe the Dodgers, if they were to swing a big move with like Adam, because they could also use Willy Adames. So if, you know, you want to add in Devin Williams and, you know, send Gavin Lux their way and some other pieces. I don't know. I do feel like there's something there. It depends on how the Brewers, obviously, how things go for the first half with them.
Yeah.
All right. Devin Williams trade incoming. Before we move on to wrapping up the rest of our 2024 predictions, we're going to take another break here on In the Pen.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Greg Jewett and Rick Graham on In the Pen, talking 2024 predictions, mostly centered around closing pitchers. We'll go to Oakland, where I think this is the most confusing situation because, you know, the best reliever in this bullpen is going to be used in a multi-inning role, and they've already lost one of their top setup options. And even as an Oakland fan, I have no idea who's going to take this role here. Rick, who are you favoring in Oakland to lead the team in saves?
I just, Mason Miller just looks so good. I don't know. Again, this is probably a situation where no one gets 20 saves, but from a roster standpoint, I want to roster Mason Miller over anyone else on this, you know, in this bullpen. It's gonna be interesting to see once the A's finally do have, you know, a situation where they're up by a couple runs in the seventh inning, see how things play out. But Miller's the guy for me. I mean, he seems suited for the role. I know they're probably going to use him, and they've said they're going to use him in a multi-inning role, but I still think that could even work out where he can get 15 plus saves potentially. So I'm going to go with Miller just because I really don't. I mean, Ercig's interesting. Your guy, I'm not going to spoil your pick, but I'm just not interested in him really.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not interested in anybody here.
Yeah.
But Greg, you actually put my mind on Miller the earliest in the offseason at, what is that called? First Pitch Arizona. First Pitch, yeah. When you were given your talk with Doug and I saw Miller up there as the A's closer, and I was like, I had never considered that, but it did make sense. Well, I was on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you still on the Miller train?
Yeah. I mean, are we still quoting a thing that Jeff Zimmerman put up like 2 months ago on a Mining the News about Mason Miller being a multi-inning reliever? I mean, seriously.
That's true.
How many multiple inning outings did he make in the spring? Oh, that'd be zero.
Right.
John Shea and Martin Gallegos, who was the one that made me put him on the closer charts in the first place, both said they expect him to be the closer this season. So I really don't understand. And again, Oakland could pull the football away from me and I could be Charlie Brown falling on my back trying to kick it, but I don't see how Miller, even if they don't use him on back-to-back nights, doesn't lead this team in saves.
But that's the thing. How many times are the A's going to be leading games back-to-back nights?
You joke about that, but Trevor May had a bunch of saves in the second. He was on my main event team. I needed every one of those saves. But I mean, you know, bad teams still get hot streaks. So, and that, it doesn't even have to be a hot streak. If he's getting two a week, then I'm happy as pie. So, if they win a game, he should be out there. Again, if it's a back-to-back day, then they probably can't use him. But at that same token, you know, if he gives me 15 to 18 saves with the strikeout and ratios I think he can provide, then I'm more than happy to have him on my roster.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me is the A's cheapness and not wanting to bump up somebody's arbitration price, which would be the case if Miller were to get a lot of saves. So that's been the main thing pushing me away from that. The fact that he has not had any multi-inning outings in the spring. Definitely might be putting an end to the idea that he's used in a weird fashion this year. But I don't know. I've just read so much about...
They could decide in the second half they want to stretch him out like the Yankees did with Michael King. We don't know what they're going to do. But even him as the closer in the first half, I still think he would end up leading the team.
Yeah. Well, I would love that to happen as an A's fan or soon to be a former A's fan. That would be, I think, best case scenario, but I just don't have faith in the A's, you know, subverting the expectations they've set in the past few years. I think it's going to be Danny Jimenez, though it's probably going to be close. We'll see. I'll be happy with Mason Miller.
Sorry, I just threw up on my mouth a little.
not many great options there. It's crazy that Lucas Erceg isn't the top guy there, which I think he's probably got the best closer stuff. Well, actually, I shouldn't be saying it like that. I think he's got the best skill set as having
anyone
been a
not
guy who
named
threw
Miller.
The most
he has the best stuff. Right.
Yes. There we go. Thank you.
But Erceg, I mean, the funny thing with Erceg too. I mean, we did our reliever draft. First year reliever draft for pitcher list, and Erceg's the one guy who shows up in red on Fantrax because he's a converted third baseman. I mean, he's not he's only been really a full-time pitcher for this is going to be his second year, I think, as a full-time pitcher. So there might be still more to Erceg. I mean, he throws hard. He's still kind of, you know, becoming a full-time pitcher. So but outside of that, there's some interesting guys in the minors, but I don't think they're, like you said, I don't think the A's are gonna just bring one of those guys up to be a closer and, you know, bump up their arbitration values. So yeah, it's Miller or bust for me there.
Yeah. All right. From one AL West cellar dweller to the reigning World Series champions, the Rangers are putting out a bullpen that I don't feel super confident about. It seemed to be the one area that they needed to address this offseason, and they did little to address that, acquiring Kirby Yates and David Robertson, and that was about it. Greg, where are you at with the Rangers? Who do you have leading the team in saves this year?
I want it to be Emiliano Teato, but, you know, he's
who?
Still
in
the
minors. Come back, Jake.
Anyways, they're going to use LeClerc for as long as they can, but they'll be adding somebody before the trade deadline. So it's LeClerc until they make a trade.
Yeah. That seems like the most logical answer.
As long as his velocity's okay, he can do all right. I don't know. Like,
he's gotten off to rough studs. See that? I forget who I was talking about with this. About him.
He's pitching through an injury, so I get it.
Right. Yeah. So maybe, you know, it depends on, you know, if he has a good April, then yeah, there might be something there. And right now we're recording this Thursday. It's about 10 o'clock Eastern time. It's a 2-2 game in the Cubs or Rangers game right now.
I just watched Naris strike out.
Right. So Naris is pitching the eighth. So there goes, you know, it looks like they're saving Alzolay for the ninth in a tie game. Spores pitched in the seventh. I like Josh Spores the best here. I picked him. I don't think he's going to actually have the most saves. And he had a little bit of a rough outing tonight, but he did have two strikeouts, I believe. Mm-hmm. But he's just, you know, I feel like at some point he's going to have a year where he's going to be on the map for saves as a closer. I don't know if it's with the Rangers. I don't know if it's anytime soon, but the stuff's there for him to succeed if he's, you know, if he's healthy. He's been battling. He's always like battling some little injury, it seems. So that's the only concern, but that's a lot of relievers. I feel like that's kind of why they're relievers. And
well, it wasn't his fault last year. They drove him into the ground.
They really did in the first. I mean, that was the only guy they were leaning on him in, up until the, you know, All-Star break. And then, yeah, he broke because they drove him into the ground. So, I think, you know, LeClerc's probably going to get the first shot, and Robertson's, you know, there. Kirby Yates worked the eighth inning tonight, which is interesting. I don't know.
You know, they said they wanted him against the left-handed hitters.
Ah, that makes sense with a splitter. Yeah,
he's their Mark Leiter Jr.
Yep. Yeah, as Leiter worked the seventh inning tonight. The splitter guys. Yeah. But yeah, back to the Rangers. I'm going to go with Spores. Jake, I know you have a different answer. I think we're all going to have different answers on this one.
Yeah, I don't feel too confident in mine. I'm not a fan of this bullpen right now, but I've got David Robertson. He's just got the most experience in that role, and we see Jose Leclerc, you know, be up and down every single season. And I would love to see Spores take that role, but I think David Robertson, given his experience in the role, is going to ultimately have the most saves there. But that seems to be such a rocky situation that it's difficult for us to settle on one guy. But I would stick with Leclerc there if fantasy managers are considering moving elsewhere. We can go to the Nationals, where it does seem to be a two-man race again. I know where Rick stands on this, so I'll go to Greg. Greg, you a Kyle Finnegan or a Hunter Harvey guy?
I'm Harvey ride or die, even though I'm 2 years in a row. Yeah. Damn Finnegan.
And that's the one from last year that, like, I feel like everyone Finnegan was kind of wrong on, and it's weird. Yeah.
Finnegan finally lost it, and then Harvey goes on the IL, and then he gets that hot streak, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right. So close. It should have been.
I had it right, and he still lost it.
We were all feeling that way, or we were feeling that way on here, I remember. We were excited that Harvey was finally getting a chance to close out games full-time, and then, and that's the thing with Harvey. It's you know, he's probably going to have an IL stint at some point this year, more likely than not, so... Does he have the role going into that, and will he have the role coming out of the IL stint? That's kind of the question. But I'm still going with Harvey because Finnegan adding a sweeper is intriguing, I guess. But he was dealing with a little bit of a back issue at the end of spring. He came back and pitched. He was fine. He didn't look great, but Kyle Finnegan never has really looked great, I guess. We'll see. I think Finnegan starts the year, but I do like Harvey long term here.
Yeah, I'm on the Harvey train, but I just don't trust the Nationals to make the smart move here. They love Kyle Finnegan for some reason, and he held on to the role basically the whole year last year, and I think he may be able to do so again. We'll move over to Minnesota, where we got an idea of who might be the team's leader in saves. This question might change if you want to consider who might be the save leader heading into the All-Star break, but Greg, who do you think is going to lead the Twins in saves?
I can't give up on Duran.
Yeah, I think he should be. I hope he should be back by middle of May, and that should give him enough time. I'll go with Duran as well.
Yeah, when I spoke to Ariel about that, I was like, all right, so I was texting him when the news broke. I'm like, where are we moving his innings on the projections? So we agreed at about 50 or a little less. So I mean. You know, you're lopping off about 18 innings from his projections and things of that nature. But yeah, so I moved him back to like 24 saves, but I still think that'll be enough. The Twins should be in a bunch of close games as we saw today.
Mm-hmm. And then you're still on the Jacks train for prior to.
I think he'll
Duran's
still be.
Return.
I'll call him the primary save share, not the closer.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll get the saves unless they need him in another spot. But yeah, I think they would prefer to have Jax there. But if they need him against the 3, 4, 5 hitters in the eighth, they'll use him if it's like a one run game.
Yep.
So don't panic if that happens.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree there that Jax is going to be the closer up until Duran returns, and then Duran's going to end up leading the team in saves. I think we've got a similar situation in Arizona, maybe the exact same situation, but are we all on the same page of Ginkle leading the team until Seabold returns, or do you think Ginkle could go the whole year? Go ahead, Rick.
Greg. Well, Greg's got it.
No, we already spoke about it, so I'll stand by what I said. I think Ginkle could. It just depends on what happens with Seawalt. He bounced back when he first got to Arizona. He had a couple of blown saves early, and then he kind of lost his sweeper. And then after a couple of weeks, things kind of clicked again. But, he can be streaky too, so we'll see what happens. But if there's any sort of a setback, it just gives Ginkle more runway.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Rick, are you going Ginkle for the full year?
If we think Seawald's back in June, I think Ginkle can get 15 saves at least, and then if he's got 12 to 15 saves by the time Seawald's back, then I think there's a legitimate possibility that Ginkle ends up leading the team in saves throughout the whole year. Yeah, I think he's, you know, must roster right now. I think for Minnesota, going back to that, Jax is probably, you know, he's probably going to end up with 10 to 12 saves as well, which again, it's, you know, in roto leagues, those 12 saves really add up, and, you know, it's a must roster there. But if you're in a head to head, it's definitely a different situation, I feel like, where you don't have to, you know, rush early in the season to find saves necessarily. So similar situations with both these guys. I think Ginkle's a little bit above that. And yeah, I think Ginkle's the one. Durant's not going to lose his job for being on the IL, but Seawald, maybe. I mean, it's definitely a possibility.
All right, that'll wrap up our team-by-team save predictions. Now we'll go through a little practice of talking about guys that had similar ADPs throughout draft season and determining who we think is going to produce the most value. We'll start it off with a group that's going in between picks 58 and 67 over the past 150 online championships on the NFBC platform. It's Emmanuel Clase, Camilo Doval, and Raisel Iglesias. Rick, do you have a favorite among these three? Who do you think is going to produce the most value in 24?
I'm still on team. I mean, I think Class A is going to be the guy there. It's going to be different without, you know, I feel there's pros and cons with Terry Francona not being there. Francona was willing to run his closers into the ground, and that allowed Class A to get a bunch of saves. But at the same time, you know, I feel like having a little bit more, you know, being able to, you know, not pitch as much might preserve Class A better in the long run. So I think maybe we see an uptick in strikeouts from Class A this year, while the saves maybe come down a little bit, but I still like him more. I think I don't know if there's really another level for Doval to get to, and Iglesias is fine. I mean, all three of these guys are fine, but I think Class A is the best of the bunch.
What about you, Greg? Class A, Doval, or Iglesias?
Yeah, no, I agree. Class A, the team concept and everything else, but not to mention the fact that bullpen's depleted, so they can't even give them the rest. It's going to be it's going to be Barlow, Class A, and pray for rain.
Yeah, losing Hankus and Stefan. Yeah, those are two big losses, and Karinchak still hurt too. Yeah, it's really Class A and Barlow.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I'm going to go with Iglesias. I just feel like he's really safe right now. He's on the best team of this group, and so he's going to have plenty of opportunities. He does have more competition than either of the other two guys, but I have a lot of faith in Iglesias this year. We'll move on to our next grouping, which is Alexis Diaz, Andres Munoz, Evan Phillips, and Pete Fairbanks. They're going between picks 80 and 90 across those aforementioned 150 online championships. I will go first here. I will take Pete Fairbanks, my boy, my favorite reliever for the past couple of years. Even if he gets injured, I just think he's just so dominant. He will get injured, even if. He always does. I'm a big fan of Pete Fairbanks. Greg, what about you?
I like Fairbanks too, and he was on a bunch of my teams last year. But I'll do this one in a two-part. Because people draft different. If you're going for upside, I would go Munoz. But if you're going for stable and ratios, then it's Phillips.
Yeah.
That's Rick. Fair. Yeah.
Because your build does matter. But, I mean, if Munoz is 2022 Munoz, then he would just jump clear away from this pack. But I don't know if that's going to be the case. And you know, the only thing that worries me about Phillips is, like I said, if they go make a trade.
Yeah, that with Phillips, you know, adding someone at the deadline. Munoz too, I wonder. I mean, they've had a tendency to kind of, you know, even when Seawall was there and going good, they didn't always use him in the ninth inning. I do wonder if, but that also, you know, it comes down to, you know, Matt Brash needs to be healthy, I feel like, for Munoz to have any sort of you know, non everyday closer role, I guess. So I like those picks, but I think Fairbanks.
Yeah, Munoz is on a very team-friendly contract. They don't have to worry about arbitration with him.
Very true as well. Yeah, they've already signed. They've already given him an extension.
Very team friendly contract.
It is. I know. He's like, what, $5 million a year? Yeah, it's
4 years, $7.5 million with club options.
That's crazy. That is wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
So our last.
He provided return on that just in 2022.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the dollars per war. I mean, you don't have to earn that much war to make that contract.
Jerry DePoto. There you go.
A man. Our last grouping of ADP closers is a group that's going between picks 190 and 202 over the past 150 online championships, and that's Alex Lang, Jose Leclerc, Robert Suarez, Mason Miller, and Carlos Estevez. Greg, who's your favorite of this bunch to produce the most value in 24?
This was a fun
one. By value, are you talking saves or SGPs?
Let's go SGP.
SGPs, then it's Miller.
Okay,
if it's and saves, it's Suarez.
All right. That? Perfect. Yeah. Rick?
I probably say the same thing. Yeah, I mean, I put Suarez down, but I was thinking just basically save value. But yeah, I mean, Miller overall value. What else? You know, the ratios and strikeouts he brings as well. I would go with Miller, but yeah, Suarez probably leads this group in saves. I think I would go with Suarez.
Yeah, I've become a lot more confident in Suarez's abilities over the past week or so as we've seen him close out a couple of games. So I am taking him there. And for our overall saves leader, now that we've gone through so many different relievers, Greg, who do you think is going to lead the majors in saves for 2024?
It's hard to go against a guy who's got back 40 save seasons. I hate to take the easy way out, but I mean, Clause A. Now,
yeah.
If you can guarantee me Iglesias is healthy, I mean, the Braves are just a saves factory, but I got to stay with Clause A.
It's funny. Me and Jake both picked Iglesias last year, and we did this before we found out Iglesias was going to miss the first couple weeks of the season. But we were on the right track last year. I'm going to go for another, you know, injury prone
30 plus in 58 games. I mean,
right. Yeah. We had the right idea if he just was healthy the whole year. But that's that I didn't even, you know, that's a good guess for this year. I went with Ryan Helsley, just to kind of throw that out there. I think the Cardinals, they're going to be better this year. I don't know how their starting pitching is going to turn out, but I think their bullpen can be stable enough where Helsley, as long as he's healthy, gets a good amount of saves. So I think, you know, he hasn't gotten to 20 saves yet, so this is a big prediction, but I think he could potentially get to 40 as long as he's healthy.
All right. And then I'm going with the homer pick. I'm going to take Camilo Doval.
One score on a wild pitch.
Oh, no.
Now they're trying to see if it's a foul ball. What a mess.
Oh, yikes.
Opening day.
High game in the ninth. Yeah,
opening day high chance, possibly.
So, yeah. Last year, what was it last year when we were doing this podcast on opening day last year, and we were all hyped up about Ronaldo Lopez being the closer in Chicago. We're like, oh, look at him throwing 100 miles per hour. And then was a Yordan Alvarez hit a bomb off him to take the lead in the bottom of the ninth. They're like, oh, well, so much for that. So yeah, here we go with Leclerc.
Can you not review that? Oh my God.
I was going to say they didn't look at that, huh? Okay. Wow.
Well, we'll see how that ninth inning turns out in Chicago. I'm taking Camilo Doval as the overall saves leader. It is definitely a homer pick, and that's all the reason I need to take it.
That's a fair one, though. That
yeah,
could happen.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then to cap off the closer predictions, who is going to win the American League Reliever of the Year award, Rick?
Pete Fairbanks, because he's due. As long as he gets to 55, 60 innings, I think Pete Fairbanks, that hasn't happened. So that's kind of a big ask, but I think, you know, they did, you know, baby him, I guess, this spring. They did. He didn't do much this spring, and I think that's for preserving him long term. So I'm hopeful that that works out and he's able to get to 55 to 60 innings this year.
And Greg, are you going with your overall saves leader, or is there somebody else that's caught your eye?
I'll go off the reservation here. I'll go with my upside guy. I'll go Munoz.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, look at you too. I am on the same page. Yes. Nice. I got it right. yeah, I think Munoz is just tons of ceiling, and with little competition right now with the injuries that they're facing, I think he's going to hold that role the whole year and really take off. And now we'll wrap up with the National League. Greg, who do you have winning the National League Reliever of the Year award? It's a hard one.
I mean, the easy answer is Edwin Diaz, but sure. You know what? I'll go off the reservation and I'll say Evan Phillips.
All right. Mm.
If it was a true fireman award, it should be him. I mean, the ratios he's put up the last 2 years get so overlooked.
Yeah. He is probably the most, I'd say he's the most underrated reliever in baseball over the past 2 years. I did say Edwin Diaz, but now I feel like that is kind of like a cheat code because he should be the reliever of the year. But if I'm, I mentioned Helsley before. I still believe in Tanner Scott as well. I think, he's probably needs to make a little tweak to fix his, fastball command. But he was, it's more than just, his strikeouts. He was a workhorse for them last year. He threw, I think it was 79 innings, and if he's able to get to 70 plus innings again, and that Marlins team, when they win games, it's going to be by like two or three runs. So
yeah.
I think, Tanner Scott could be in line if he's healthy and like throwing strikes. That's, he's in line for a huge year potentially.
But you're not worried about him getting traded?
That's the other thing. Cause he does. Yeah. He is on the last year. He's of his. Free agent, yeah. I know he is. I want to believe Miami.
I can't see this Marlins team contending.
I know they've already traded away John Birdie. They're trying to get rid of veterans already.
Fair sale, no.
But yeah, no, that is for sure a concern, and most likely wherever he ends up, it will be as a setup guy. So yeah, that's a problem. But if they do,
all he's got to do is stay in the NL.
That's true. Depending on how they fix this award, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Diaz is the favorite, but I like Scott as a dark horse.
All right. And I will double down on my Camilo Duvall pick, and I will choose him as the National League Reliever of the Year award. I have him on none of my fantasy teams, but that doesn't mean I won't be rooting for him. And as we wrap up the podcast, looks like Adbert Alzolay is in for the save for the Cubs on opening day. But that will wrap up our predictions. Greg, thanks so much for coming on and breaking down all of this with us. Please tell the listeners where they can find your work and what you've got coming out across the beginning of the season.
I don't do any content. No. So let's see. Me and my guys, we took over Closer Monkey from the founding fathers. It was really cool meeting those guys, a couple of them in person. So that's been quite an overwhelming experience. Reliever Recon is a mere $5 a month. And today alone, there were three articles. I do my recap stuff. We have a guy who does daily streamers for relievers trying to get vulture wins and vulture saves. And Aaron put out a points league article. So, I mean, I think every day for the regular season, there's at least two to maybe three articles. I mean, for $5 for basically a cup of coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, you could get our reliever advice and we really are kind of NFBC centric on Reliever Recon. I don't want to say it's the only thing we do, but that's kind of where we cater. We do a Sunday night Fab Five relievers for the evening Fab runs. And then I think Close the Monkey will keep that more the Yahoo, ESPN, and that sort of a format feel. And then I also, every other week, I'll be doing a hitting lineup column for Baseball HQ. And then my weekly column for The Athletic will be running on Thursdays. So
wow.
if that doesn't make you feel tired, then I don't know what does. But yeah, this is open. Oh, Elijah just
served. I was just saying, I know what Jacob is laughing about because I.
Here we go, Travis Jankowski. Another live breaking moment here, and a big dude just caught the ball, and he is ecstatic. But anyways, so
that's crazy.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me on. It's always good to be on with you guys. I appreciate all the work you do, and it's great. I think the best thing about covering relievers is we are a very tight fraternity. Mm-hmm. And I pride myself on that. I see all these other cloud chasers always fighting online, and you never see it from our little niche.
That's right. Relievers stick together. We're like one big bullpen.
We're all trying to figure out what the hell is going on. That's really what it is. But yeah, I mean, it's great to see, you know, Closer Monkey. It's been that when I was growing up, that was, you know, a huge resource. It's great to see it in good hands still as the torch has been passed. So yeah, thank you, Greg, for coming on. This was a good show. I just still can't believe Travis Jankowski just hit a home run off Adbert Alzolay. I'm still trying to get over that.
Well, why don't you plug your Twitter and let everybody know what you're working on?
This is 2 years in a row where we've been on live and we're you know talking about a closer and they give up a go ahead or it's tying home run. It's going to be a thing now for us. but yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. I just put out updated holds rankings today or yesterday if you're listening to this on Friday. I'll have, you know, updated rankings from here on out every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. It's for saves, for holds, for saves plus holds. And we also, and Jake's a part of this team, the reliever ranks team, we put out a bullpen depth chart every day. It's a little bit revamped this year. We're still working out some kinks, but we do have some added features with the rankings right on it. And we also have, you know, situations and like if we break down committees and whatnot. So it's worth taking a look as well. So yeah, that's pretty much all I got going on. What do you got, Jake?
You know, all kinds of stuff. I'm co-workers with both of you. I'm doing playing time analysis at Baseball HQ as always, and doing the reliever ranks. I'm also doing the First Pitch podcast every weekend for Pitcherless, so make sure to check that out. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. Make sure to go check out Reliever Recon and Closer Monkey, and to check out all the incredible work we are putting out over at Pitcherless and on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Just always a consistent stream of content to consume. But once again, Greg, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate your insight, and we'll see our listeners next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.